It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this final day of March 2021. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that is, of course, where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Yes. And if you go there now, you will be greeted by Jessica in Minnesota and Squeaky, and capably moderated by, well, yours truly. And I don't know, maybe even Brother Deacon Asa will wander over at some point in time so that we will not be an unmoderated group. No. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is, in fact, midweek, downhill to Friday, hump day, and prayer meeting Wednesday, and I wanted to let you know that, you know, We're hoping maybe as spring comes on, hallelujah, amen, we're hoping that we'll get the imaginary cathedral back open for services with an imaginary audience, because it's an imaginary religion with an imaginary god, or goddess, actually. Aren't they all? But nonetheless, the little old blue-haired ladies and little old blue-haired men have been working fastidiously to prepare the midweek fellowship hall meal, which goes out and gets delivered round and about in the community. Little old blue-haired ladies got out their bread-making skills today, and they whipped up some pretzel dough and started wrapping up big, juicy, all beef, no nitrite, no nitrate hot dogs, and baked them, and had some just truly, truly exquisite mustard to go with them. And in honor of someone we're going to be talking about here in a few minutes, the little old ladies of the little old blue-haired ladies of the Fellowship Hall kitchen even whipped up a classic attempt at that upper Midwestern treat, that delight. Oh, my God, my voice is becoming like Garrison Keillor's. A hot dish. Yes, yes. And so I can tell you, I tasted it early on, and it's quite delicious. And we'll be talking to our pal Jessica in Minnesota here in a few minutes. And I should note that every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this being the final day of March, it means that we extend thanks to our Patreon contributors, without whom we would be in substantially worse shape. And so thanks to them, and I'll get the list going here in a second. Clack, clack, clack. I hate this keyboard. Doesn't have a number pad on it. It's funny, you don't miss a number pad until you don't have one. But just the same, and and I go through this every freaking month because this is about the only time that I go over there, because it's such an unpleasant little interface. Come on. We can get there in a minute. I'm sorry for the dead air, but damn it. They do not make it easy to find they don't make it easy to find the actual patron list. Ah, there it is. There it is. Thank you. Thank you to Patrick in Germany. Thank you to Janice. Thank you to David. Thank you to Eve. Thank you. Thank you to our pal Rico in DeBerg. Thank you to Chico or Chica. Thank you, Chica. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Mark, Uncle Smokey. Thank you, Jake. Thank you to Steve. Thank you to Nancy. Thank you to Jimmy. Thank you, Bernadette. And a special thanks to Bernadette because I went by the post office box today, and lo and behold, there was a parcel from Bernadette, and that will make Agnes very, very happy, and her neck will not hurt, and her back will not hurt as bad as it has been since we ran out of that wonderful, wonderful salve for what ails you. Thank you to Irwin in Montana. Thank you to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, John in North Dakota. Thank you, Oak. Thank you, Dave, number 11. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Michael of the Guffins. Thank you, Balmer Bob. Thank you, Jeff in Slow. Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you ever so much, Annette. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Joyce. Thank you, Vernon in San Diego. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Kat in Ohio. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you, Barbara, in Minnesota. Thank you, Alec. Thank you to the Nubian. Thank you, Carl. Thank you again, Irwin in Montana. Thank you, Barb, in Minnesota. Thank you, Horst in Taiwan. Thank you to Robin, another R-O-B-Y-N, by the way. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you to Terrace in California. Thank you, Frank. That would be Fab, the sponsor of the Fab machine. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you to all of our Patreon contributors. You know, Patreon gets pulled out on the first day of the month. And actually, I think what's going to be pulled tomorrow is going to be for March. That's the way Patreon makes it all work. It's ever so confusing. But thank you. Thank you so very much. Thanks as well to Jessica, who chipped in, and thank you to an anonymous friend who chipped in to help us maybe reach our fundraising goal for the month of March. It's going to be tough. This is not going to be an easy one. We have tonight to get together $400 so that we can finish March to the good and I can pay at least a couple more bills to get the month started. Thank you so very much, one and all. If you want to become a Patreon subscriber, well, just go over to headon.live, and you too will be mentioned at the end of every month. Thank you. And to get to the Patreon interface, just go to contribute, and it'll take you to the Patreon interface. If you just want to become a subscriber via PayPal, that interface is right there on the main page. And hopefully we will complete our fundraising for the month today so that April Fool's doesn't turn out to be truly awful. It looks like we're going to have an April Fool's joke, though, because we are 11 days into spring. And at 11 days into spring, the overnight low here in the hills and hollers of almost level west by Cold Trump Justice Ginyistan, Jim Ginyistan, that's confusing, almost level west by Cold Jim Ginyistan, is 19 here. Yeah. So, well, we'll be burning a little more propane and burning a little more kerosene, but spring will come. And it'll come here before it gets to people like Jessica. Without a doubt, you know, up Minnesota way, probably maybe a week or 2 weeks, I don't know. But I'm absolutely crazy for the advent of warm weather. Sorry, just a second. I'm multitasking again. Let's see here. Just a sec. Okay, that's done. All right, in the effort to get us down and get us fully funded for the month of March, Ralph said, I got 20 if others kick in 20. So maybe we can get this started and, you know, kiss March goodbye. And this is a particularly poignant last day of March for me. Because, well, it is my first ever noting or marking or participating in the Trans Day of Visibility, TDOV. You know, when you write TDOV and you use a capital T and a capital D and a little O and a big V, Norseman Rick last night was talking about Klingon language. Well, TDOV looks very much like a Vulcan word. But today is the Trans Day of Visibility. It's a day that exists for people, trans people and their allies, to note our existence, our very existence, and the fact that we have a place in civil society, no matter how many people try to deny it. And one of the, we had a momentous occasion today because President Joe Biden did something that no other president has ever done. And that was the declaration or a proclamation observing the Transgender Day of Visibility. It was a beautiful thing. It brought a tear to my eye. It really, really did. He issued a statement and said that most important of statements, trans rights are human rights. On Twitter, he said, transgender rights are human rights, and I'm calling on every American to join me in uplifting the worth and dignity of transgender Americans. Together, we can stamp out discrimination and deliver on our nation's promise of freedom and equality for all. I saw that on Twitter, and I retweeted it because it was absolutely breathtaking. No other president has ever even acknowledged our existence. And it is momentous in a way that until you have been part of a marginalized community, you won't necessarily realize. I was shocked. Yeah. And I was proud. And I was touched. And the statement reads as follows. Today, we honor and celebrate the achievements and resiliency of transgender individuals and communities. Transgender Day of Visibility recognizes the generations of struggle, activism, and courage that have brought our country closer to full equality for transgender and gender non-binary people in the United States and around the world. Their trailblazing work has given countless transgender individuals the bravery to live openly and authentically. This hard-fought progress is also shaping an increasingly accepting world in which peers at school, teammates and coaches on the playing field, colleagues at work, and allies in every corner of society are standing in support and solidarity with the transgender community. Transgender Americans of all ages, President Biden added, face high rates of violence, harassment, and discrimination. Nearly one in three transgender Americans have experienced homelessness at some point in life. Transgender Americans continue to face discrimination in employment, in housing, in health care, and public accommodations. The crisis of violence against transgender women, especially transgender women of color, is a stain on our nation's conscience. And I think this was a necessary response, and probably a very calculated response, to the at least 82 anti-trans bills that have been introduced in various legislatures around the country. Last year was a record 79 bills. They beat that record, these vicious bigots in state legislatures, by three this year. And so the other thing he did on this Transgender Day of Visibility, as Darlene from Connecticut points out, he has this day, as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Services, President Biden has sacked, trashed, scrapped, thrown upon the dust heap of history, Nitwit Nero's bigoted ban on transgender troops in the military. And again, made a profound statement. This wasn't something that just happened overnight. For 2 months, the Pentagon has been seeking to create detailed guidelines for the military after the order was entered. They go into force within 30 days. It is profound. About 14,700 members of the United States military on active duty and in the reserves identify as transgender. There really aren't that many of us. And I guess because there are so few of us, we are so easy to despise. And if nothing else, that proves that this is no choice. This does, if it was, it wouldn't even qualify as masochism. It is no choice. It is an existential necessity when it happens. And most, and you know, as we've talked about before, most trans people have known from usually somewhere early in life. I know that was the case with me. And so I celebrate these landmarks. And I'm proud. And just as an aside, I waited until midnight last night, and I posted my Trans Day of Visibility post on Facebook and noted it on Twitter and noted it on Instagram. Because we have to be visible. If we are not visible, we are all the more easy to erase. And it's not just the right wing that wants to erase us, the religious maniacs, the Republicans, the maggots. But there are people who consider themselves to be progressive and aren't at all, who want to erase us too. And that refers to the trans-exclusionary radical feminists, or TERFs. They're people who believe that people like me, people like Jessica, whom we'll be talking to in a little bit. Ought not be seen or heard or probably even exist within civil society and public spaces. And I will not, so help me God, ever go back into that hateful fucking closet again. No. No, you can't make me. I will not. And so it touched my heart that when I put up my post on Facebook about it, it has gotten more positive responses than any other thing that I have ever put up on Facebook. Over 500 positive responses and counting. And it is beautiful, and it is encouraging, and it fills my heart with such warmth and such appreciation and such gratitude that I can scarcely express it. It has been magnificent. And, of course, because it is the Trans Day of Visibility, that means that the TERFs are out. And while I've been having a largely, wonderfully positive experience these last 6.5 months, today I got attacked by my first TERF. And generally speaking, I respond to being attacked on social media. Well, I don't respond to being attacked on social media. It is to be expected. But this was especially odious. A TERF messaged me. They, because, you know, this person is probably a bot or an unreal person. The person was mimicking at least a cis female. And I'll just put this out there on Facebook, for those of you who have it and for those of you who are friends of mine on Facebook. If there is a Karen Powers, KarinPowers, and if you have ever said or done anything on social media to indicate that you are trans or an ally of trans people, this vile shit weasel may very well, if they're friends on your page, they will probably, if you say something positive about trans people, unmask and start policing you and explaining to you that we don't exist, that we're not real. I was called a fucking fetishist. And it was disgusting. This hateful creature called me sir and a guy. Quite deliberately. Even after I said that on the Trans Day of Visibility, I did not care to interact with them. And, of course, they went on. I eventually blocked and reported because it was hateful. It truly was hateful conduct. And we'll see where it goes from there. But, you know, it's not that odd a form of conduct, really. My Jewish friends know what happens on the day of Holocaust Remembrance. The Nazis come out of the woodwork. They come scurrying out from behind the baseboards like the little roaches that they are. And they attack Jewish people just for being Jewish. In Charlottesville in August of 2017, they marched and said, and these people who voted for Donald Trump, whom he later referred to as very fine people, chanted and shouted, "Jews will not replace us." And oddly enough, the TERFs have shockingly similar language, because they approach gender as some sort of zero-sum game where there's just not enough gender to go around. There's just not enough womanhood to go around. There's just not enough No, they never go after the, or I won't say never. They seldom go after the transmasculine people. The people who assigned female at birth whose identified gender is male. Instead, they engage in language policing, saying that male to female transgender people cannot cannot use the word woman, cannot use the word female. I was told I could call myself a trans lady if I wanted to. And I think this twit did not know me very well. Because you're not going to go very far trying to tell me what language I can and cannot use. But it's these TERFs on their behavior on the Trans Day of Visibility are the functional equivalent of Nazis on Holocaust Remembrance Day. I am not comparing the two by any stretch of the imagination. Violence and hatred toward people, toward trans people, is not of the same degree as the mass murder of 6 million or more people murdered for being Jewish. Although, of course, on Holocaust Remembrance Day, we remember maybe the original TERF, Adolf Hitler, on Holocaust Remembrance Day, because trans people went to the ovens too. Gay men went to the ovens. The Pink Triangle died alongside the Yellow Star of David. Because, again, there was a determination that we had no place in society. Right? Yeah. And so that's part of why it is so absolutely wonderful that President Biden became today the first president ever to commemorate the Trans Day of Visibility. And I will feel a sense of gratitude toward him forever for that. Because it is literally life-changing. Just as our lives change when we transition. That, the acknowledgement of our reality, the acknowledgement of our existence, the acknowledgement of our right to not to be slaughtered at will, is, yes, in the truest sense of the word, life-changing, life-affirming, and even life-saving. And with every day, with every passing day, we have another opportunity to note what a dramatically effective and committed and decent president we put into office, with particular emphasis on voters of kindness and decency in Georgia who risk everything to give us a fighting chance in the Senate and to give us Joe Biden. Not to diminish the efforts of people all over the country who worked to see Joe Biden become the president. But Georgia in particular occupies a space of special honor, special dignity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they don't listen. But to the Biden administration, from one transgender individual, a simple and deeply heartfelt thank you. And thanks, of course, for all the other things that he is doing to try to make American lives better to try to help save us from the pandemic, to try to make the pandemic end. Thank you. And today he did something that surely will resonate with liberals, progressives, maybe centrist Democrats. And that is, he announced a massive program to restore the infrastructure of this country and to pay for it by having those who have the most do the paying. I know how dramatic this is because it meant that I got another press release from 45 office.
Joe Biden's radical plan to implement the largest tax hike in American history is a massive giveaway to China and many other countries that will send thousands of factories, millions of jobs, and trillions of dollars to these competitive nations.
And with the word nations capitalized, it's almost as though he's doing this with his thumbs.
The Biden plan will crush American workers and decimate U.S. manufacturing while giving special tax privileges to outsourcers, foreign and giant multinational corporations.
All of which is a filthy fucking lie, because the only thing that Donald Trump knows how to do is lie.
This legislation would be among the largest self-inflicted economic wounds in history.
Legislation wounds. We've got some noun disagreement in there, nitwit.
It's a classic globalist betrayal by Joe Biden and his friends. The lobbyists will win. The special interests will win. China will win. The Washington politicians and government bureaucrats will win, but hardworking Americans will lose.
And so all of that drivel, all of that bilge tells us one thing, namely that the Biden plan is a good one and a great one.
The Biden plan will crush American workers.
Really? They hadn't already been crushed? Because I'm pretty sure they'd already been crushed. Massive unemployment. Yeah. States and municipalities and counties struggling to stay afloat.
Biden's ludicrous multi-trillion dollar tax hike is a strategy for total economic surrender. Sacrifice.
You know what, though? If we're taxing billionaires, at least Donald Trump can take solace in the fact that he won't have to pay it. Deadbeat motherfucker. Right. Yeah. Water. And the plan he has put forward is extremely progressive in nature. And so I'm hoping that our side can take the time to say hooray for President Joseph Robinette Biden. He deserves all the praise that we can give him. Yeah, LOL. Arnold says, a lot of right-wingers I see are acting like our country's dying, when in fact it is coming back. It is improving. Life is getting better. Arnold asks, what's a TERF? TERF stands for Trans-Exclusionary Radical Feminist. These are people who make, like I said, arguments that gender is a zero-sum game. And that they alone have the power to define what words mean and who can use which words. And frankly, they bear more than a passing resemblance to Nazis. That's who TERFs are. And TERFs will tell you that they're liberal or progressive. But no one who opposes the expansion of human rights can consider themselves to be liberal or progressive, because that is the ultimate definition of fascism. To make progress, to be progressive, is to be for more rights. And these odious, pathetic, hateful, hate-filled monstrosities are anything but. That having been said, like I said, it is the 31st day of March, and on this Trans Day of Visibility, I want to afford a special opportunity for visibility to some of my wonderful new friends that I have made over the course of the last few months, and in particular the last 3 months. One of whom is our pal Jessica in Minnesota, whom we'll be talking to in a moment. Yeah, Lamar the Magnificent says, okay, I said it. I'm saying this in fun, but it's true. I hereby welcome you and all others to the Republican love affair as a black man who in the 1960s was and still is well-loved by the Republican Party, especially after 1965. The love for my kind, well, should I say more? And we stand together, or we fall separately. And that's the absolute truth. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Lamar. I am proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. Absolutely. Because almost as though he is reading Frank in Iowa's mind, Frank sent a note saying, how about an update? And lo and behold, at almost the same time, Brother Deacon Asa said, the TERFs, my friends, are feminazis. TERFs are feminazis, Arnold. And speaking of which, Rush Limbaugh, he's still dead. He's still dead. The number pad thing that I mentioned earlier, Lisa's, you know, I find it odd that people do not get confused by this. A calculator keyboard number pad has one on the bottom left, 1, 2, 3, going up. A telephone has one on the top left, 1, 2, 3, going down. At least they're left to right, for God's sakes. That's probably where the confusion isn't. But yeah, that's an interesting little, and odd that we never sorted out some sort of a standard for that. There's got to be a reason. Bill says, hate to pick on you like this. My desktop keyboard has a row of numbers and a number pad. Yeah, I know, but I had to buy this one on the fly and I was broke and this was $13 or something. And I've got it. It's wireless. It's got batteries. It's Logitech. It's tiny and it's loud. Hate the little bastard. Matt in San Francisco, subject line Rush. I saw he also celebrates 1 month sober today. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that gets you the cowbell, Matt. That's a beautiful thing. And a note from Steve in New York. We clown around a lot, Steve and I do. We all do here in this community. Dearest Robin, I'm writing to you after your encounter with the TERF today. You've heard about the gay agenda witticism. We've laughed about it. However, there is something that is deadly serious that I, as a senior member of the LGBT plus family, failed to give you, and that's your welcome packet. While this may seem another witticism at first, I don't mean it as that. I mean it seriously. As welcoming as many of the LGBTQ plus family can be, there are elements of the family and those claiming to be cousins, aunts, uncles, etc., who are not friendly. They're not welcoming. They're not, in fact, allies. You experience that today. In the same way that many femme gay men and many butch lesbians face that same vitriol, you will, as you realize today, experience it too. What you experienced is that some feel you are among the group who is too out. You're one of those who make the mainstream too uncomfortable. Too uncomfortable. You will hear how now is not the time to act like one of those members of the LGBTQ+ family. Trans folks, femme gay men, butch lesbians, and other more visible members of the family make some of your family members uncomfortable and force them to confront their own internalized homophobia. I will fully confess that I have struggled with this bigotry and still do, though in a diminished way. I have realized that it is I who must get over my lack of comfort. It is I who must let my joy for you overshadow any shame or embarrassment that I have. Or as a gay, white, masculine, or straight-acting man, I hate those words, but I use them to make my point. Putting aside that there is, as my first totally out friend told me, nothing straight-acting about having sex with another man, I don't have the burden you have. Yes, I know that you had considered this bigotry you would face as you began your coming-out journey. However, nothing can prepare a person who may know about, study, or research such attitudes until they are directed at you. They are about you, and the hurler of those arrows intends to harm you. So I apologize, Steve says. Steve's the one constantly telling me to stop apologizing, so I get fair is fair. So I apologize for not being more explicit and raw about telling you that you would experience hatred and that in spite of that, I will have your back going forward. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. And those words are far too weak. I know this community has my back. And I knew this shit would happen. Doesn't make it hurt any the less. And one of the reasons they do it, they do the things they do the way they do, is they know that most of us, as we transition, are trying to put away our former selves and not immediately revert to type. I had that one little incident of a few weeks ago. And as I said, one of the most awful things about it was that it was as if my transition fell completely away and I was ready and I was completely ready to be a dude and get in a fucking fight. When I have even spent a life before living authentically, I spent a life trying to avoid physical confrontation. Because I don't like it. But in that, it was, and that was what, and I was ashamed of myself for my response. And so I have, when we get attacked by these TERF types, we cannot say, listen, you, and start using all the words that might have been available to us at another time, but are no longer available to us. We are foreclosed in some of our defenses. And I felt that today, and it was frightening. And this little creature, well, I'm going to make a post about you. And they trawled around and found, one of the old photos that we use with Podbean. So for all I know, there's a post up about how I am a fetishist. They took the photo of me, and it's a form of violation. And as another, as a cis female ally said to me earlier, welcome to womanhood, honey. This proves you are. Because they took the photo that I use of myself for my Facebook page and said, this is the fetishization of femininity. You know what that picture was? That was a picture that my beloved partner took of me when we were just goofing off. And Agnes took it and said, oh my God, this is so cute. And I went, oh my God, that is cute. Because it's a beautiful thing to feel that thing, that cute, for the first time in your fucking life after 58 years. After, you know, when do we achieve consciousness? When is our personality set? About five years old? And there, about 5 years old, was when I knew things were wrong. And so that led to a lifetime of despising my own image, my own appearance, my own self. and knowing that everything about me was wrong and bearing up under it just the same for those 53 years. And so it's not Robin's night on the crucifix night. But it is prayer meeting Wednesday. And, you know, some of these people, you know, these TERFs, and you know, you got to take a look at where the funding, with anything like this, any hate group, you look for where the funding comes from. And what it is, you know, while the religious maniacs work that in that corner, hating the trans community, these people try to purport that they are coming at it from a dispassionate a dispassionate scientific approach, which, and of course, it's unscientific as fuck. Because science cannot be close-minded. Science must be ever-seeking. And these people are as close-minded as army ants. So we have that. So I just wanted to make a little bit more explanation. And this is a very, very special day for the trans community. And we have members of the trans community in this Horn Family Community congregation. And I just wanted to let those people know you are visible, you are valid. You are a good human being, and you have worth in this world. And to all of our allies, say thank you to you for standing with us, protecting us, uplifting us, having our back, and brooking no bullshit from the likes of that TERF filth or the right-wing maniacs and Republicans and maggots. Thank you. Together, we really, really, really can make the world a better place. Because there is plenty of gender, plenty of sexuality, and plenty of language to go around. And most of all, with the exception of those miserable excuses for members of the human race, an abundance of love, if we will but show it, if we will but accept it, and if we will but share it. Okay? And that having been said, I would be remiss if I did not say that I'm worried about how this month ends. I am perturbed, and I hope we can meet those $400, and Ralph's is waiting for somebody to put up 20 so she can match it, and that'll get us down to 360. That'll mean that that'll mean we have $60 from yesterday to finish being fully funded, and then 300 for today. It's not Friday on the front porch, but this does qualify, this last day of March, as a community made miracle on this, my first Trans Day of Visibility. So with that all having been said, I've been talking long enough, and Jessica has been patiently waiting. And one of the loveliest things about the conversation we're going to have, and tell me if I'm wrong, Jessica, this is not only the Trans Day of Visibility for you, this is your transiversary, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Robin.
Congratulations. Happy transiversary.
Thank you. This is my 1 year anniversary of coming out to the world and saying, hello, I am Jessica, and I am a transgender woman.
As the saying goes, I see you, Jessica. You are visible.
Well, I see you too. And I just wanted to give a shout out to everyone in the Horn community who's trans, non-gender conforming, and or gender nonconforming, I should say, and non-binary. And you are loved, you are seen, and you are validated as well as those who are still in the closet. Because Robin and I have both been there. We know what it's like, and we understand.
Yeah, I think I said earlier today that, and any stripe in the rainbow flag can tell you that the closet is the most hateful place in all the known universes. It is the most hellish place in all the known universes.
I was there for 25 years. Ever since I was 16. So. I don't know. So one of the reasons why I'm kind of a late bloomer, so to speak, is because I didn't really have intense gender dysphoria growing up. I think I remember being 5 years old and declaring I was a girl, and adults kind of laughed it off.
You'll grow out of it. You know, it's just a phase.
And you know how children like to pretend being other people? Well, I distinctly remember being 4, 5, 6 and dressing up as Marcy from Peanuts and just being happy as a clam. My little orange t-shirt, and I think I had a pair of my mom or dad's glasses, and I walked around and did.
Oh, that's just charming. Oh, that's adorable.
Is this what you mean, sir? You know?
Yeah, and Charles Schulz, your fellow Minnesotan, some of the oldest misgendering on planet Earth, Marcy referring to her pal Peppermint Patty as sir.
Absolutely, but no, I remember. Even in elementary school, I think I was kindergarten, maybe first grade. And I was just happily going around in that mindset. And I remember a group of sixth graders looking down at me, and I was just happily being me and declaring myself as being Marcy, you know. And they laughed and belittled and shamed me for it. And that was me going in the closet. And I just kind of locked that away until I hit my mid-teens. And this was about 1991, 92, 93 when I was 16. And I started to have the questions of, okay, wait a minute, I'm male, but I kind of identify more with female, but what?
Yeah.
And at the time, the experts in psychology, excuse me, they told us it was completely normal and healthy to have these fantasies of being the opposite gender, and that you can go ahead, have the thoughts, but just don't dwell on it. Which
just don't think about it.
Exactly, which just really didn't help me. Plus, growing up in rural Minnesota, my hometown had a population of about 1,400. You know, a booming metropolis. And, you know, I got a lot of guff and a lot of teasing for being albino. I would have absolutely, positively, physically gotten my ass handed to me had I come out and said I was trans. So I couldn't come out. And we didn't have the language to even begin for me to even describe how I was feeling. But these...
And neither for and neither for that matter did society, really.
Right. Well, you know, and then you grow up and you watch shows like Jerry Springer. And they had us on there and we were treated like circus sideshows. And we were mocked and laughed at. And then, of course, that wonderful ending to Ace Ventura.
Oh, yeah, of course, yes.
Yeah, that just really makes you want to stand up and say, you know what, I'm trans. Yeah, no. So, you know, it just, society just, I shouldn't say society, I just, it wasn't the right time. And so time went on, and on December 5th of 2008, at 31 years of age, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer, and they had to remove my left testicle. How graphic can I get here, Robin?
You know, they got nothing. You can get as graphic as you want to, Jessica. The number of meals I've ruined in various time zones it cannot be calculated at this point.
Well, I'm not going to get overly graphic, but I just wanted to know.
No, it's no. I mean, there's no more to be shielded or hidden from in testicular cancer than there is in prostate cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer, breast cancer, ovarian cancer. It's fucking cancer, and it sucks.
Yeah, having gone through it twice, yes, I can very much say yes. So,
yeah, it's not exactly the disease so nice you had it twice.
Yeah, exactly. So they had to go in and remove my left testicle. And then I went through 11 weeks of chemotherapy. And at the end of that, they said more than likely I was going to be sterile afterwards. And so there I sat. And society places such a high regard on men being intact and being virile. And being able to perform, and this is all a measurement of masculinity. And I had to sit there and try to figure out where I sat on that spectrum. Where was I now?
Right.
And I came away feeling less than, because that's how society judged me, having gone through what I went through. Yeah, they held me up in regard because I was a cancer survivor, but I came away a broken man, so to speak.
Yes.
And so for the next 5 years, while I was trying to deal with my the aftermath of the cancer, I found out that my cancer came back. I had two lymph nodes in the center of my chest, but they were inaccessible for biopsy. So it was kind of a Schrodinger's cat kind of scenario of, well, cancer or no, won't find out until we open you up. And so the procedure was going to be to take those two and 27 under my stomach just to be safe. And then they said they'd take out whatever they found afterwards that were questionable, which eventually wound up to be 48, five of which were malignant, and they were still encapsulated, so they didn't spread, but this was going to be a was a carcinoma, teratoma. It's one of those, and it they said if it started and took root, it would go like wildfire, like kudzu. I use the analogy of nuclear fallout, just all over, and there was very little response to chemo or radiation. They'd have to go in and cut out material, and most likely that would be end of story right there. But fortunately, that wasn't the case. Unfortunately, I walked away from that with some erectile dysfunction, and I had the inability to release material. So any ideas of procreation were out the window. So that was it. Done. And that really...
Jessica, let me interrupt just a moment to say, to ask.
Yeah.
I just want to... Are you okay? Because I know this is difficult. And if you need to take a breath or anything, just, you're good.
No, I'm fine. I'm just talking and thinking about 20 sentences ahead and trying to bridge the gap.
I know the feeling. Verbal, it's like playing chess and trying to know what your 18th move is going to be when you haven't touched a pawn yet.
Well, and I mentioned the chemo. Sometimes I'll be talking and what's that word? It's a side effect of the chemo, even 12 years on. Excuse me. I'm still having side effects. So.
Jesus.
Well, I'm upright and sucking wind. So.
Well, right, yeah. I mean, every day above the, as we say here, every day above the ground's a good one.
So if I have to put up with a little memory loss, I can live with that.
So, literally live with that.
Yes. So again, this blow to my manhood just brought forth more of the gender questioning and
I was going to ask you. I mean, this was a blow to a manhood that you weren't in, that you weren't particularly comfortable with in the first place.
No, but I also looked at it as war. I had an invader that was going to try to kill me, and I had to do everything in my power to walk away the victor. And if I had to walk away with battle scars, so be it. And I have the scar on my neck. You've seen pictures of me on Facebook. I think you can see the scar on my neck in some of them. And then there's some pictures I've posted where you can see my zipper. And I wear those with pride. I don't try to cover them up. I don't try to apply cosmetics or anything. Those tell a story. Just like I have a bunch of scars on my legs and back from biopsies over the years where they were trying to keep melanoma at bay. So all of them I wear with pride because it shows that I tangled with something nasty and I live to tell the tale.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear.
So yeah, that's the upside of the cancer is I started having the thoughts. It's not too many normal people that lay in bed at night. And I had the thought of, I should put a note in my wallet that in the event I'm in a car wreck and I need reconstructive surgery on my face, I want to be redone feminine.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if it was between the two bouts or after the second, I would be looking at female models and how they were posing. And instead of my first thought being, oh, God, she's so hot, my first thought was, God, I wish I had a body like her.
God, I wish I could look like that. God, I wish I could be that way. God, and every aspect of it is of your own self is a sort of curse, and a kind of disaffirmation of who you are and can be.
Exactly, and I would just again, as I had when I was a teenager, I just dismissed it. I just said, huh, well, that was an odd thought. Why the heck did I think that? And then on I went. And it was just an ebb and flow. These thoughts would come to the forefront. I'd ponder them for a few days and then back to the recesses of my mind. And one night in December of 2018, and I've told you this dream off air. It was a sunny day in Las Vegas, and I was poolside at the Sands, and the Sands had been long demolished, so why I was dreaming of that, I don't know. And I was going to take a dip in the pool, and first-person perspective, I slip off my white terry cloth robe to go in the hot tub or swimming pool, and I happen to look down at myself, and I'm a very voluptuous woman in a white bikini with black polka dots.
Nice!
And I woke up, and I lay there for a couple minutes trying to come to grips with what that was. And in the past, again, I would have said, huh, well, that was weird. Huh. Gone and forgotten. But for some reason, I sat there and I then started to go back through my life, back to all these odd thoughts, back to playing Dungeons and Dragons, being the female characters, and how natural it felt, how euphoric it was to just play a character that was me. Going back to all the Halloweens that I dressed in drag, and in particular 2008, I was Jessica Rabbit.
That takes some courage.
Oh, I'll have to show you some pictures sometimes. But I thought about that, and when I did it, you know, I was an actor in high school, and I had no qualms doing this because I just wanted to think outside the box. I had no problem playing a role. And I was so dedicated to that role of Jessica Rabbit, I actually bought a pair of 3-inch stilettos. And 3 weeks,
I would break an ankle.
Well, that's why I took 3 weeks ahead of time, strapped those things on, and practiced walking around so I wouldn't do it. And I wore those damn things that were 2 sizes too small for 8 hours. And I didn't suffer any negative effects. I think the balls of my feet were a little sore, but other than that, no. But in going with those costumes, every Halloween I would get a little disappointed when I had to take the makeup off at the end of the night and take the costume off and go back to my humdrum existence. But, and I commented to a friend about it when they asked me about, don't you feel weird? And I said, no, this feels natural. This feels right. And then having to take the makeup and whatnot off, and that feeling of disappointment that hit harder than it did when I was doing, say, Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh my God, you do a Hunter S. Thompson too? I'm jealous.
Do you know, I just told you how dedicated I am. I actually went to my friend who's my hairdresser and had her buzz my head, the top.
Oh dear God.
So I just had like that, I had just that little U shape around my temples and around the back. And being albino, it blended in so it looked like I was bald. And then we took some temporary dye and dyed my frock or whatever you call that black. And then I put on the sunglasses and I had the Vegas visor and the cigarette and the holder. I swear to God, in the aviator sunglasses, and you take a look at Thompson and you look at me and it's a spitting image.
Oh my God. You'll have to show me a photo when we're off air. Jessica, here's these little weird freaking things keep happening on this program. Here's another one. Earlier today, I saw a link to a story. The president's only remaining surviving son has a memoir coming out. And the way it was headlined, and just bear with me, all my stories are long, Jessica. I'm so sorry.
Well, that's fine.
The way it was slugged was Hunter Biden, drugs, booze, and guns, memoir to be released. And I clicked on it and opened it in a new tab, scratching my head and asking myself, hold on. There's a new Hunter Thompson memoir? Booze, drugs, and guns? Where's the breaking news in this? And I had seen Hunter Biden and transposed Hunter Thompson. And lo and behold, here we are having a conversation about you putting together a killer Hunter Thompson costume. Just damn weird world. Weird little universe we got here.
The coincidences, right?
But are they? Read the book.
Exactly. Or as Thompson would say, buy the ticket, take the ride.
Exactly.
So what does all this have to do with what I was saying? Well, that's what I was doing. It was like a beautiful mind, and I was Russell Crowe looking at all these little instances in my life, you know, Marcy and dressing up like Jessica Rabbit and the D&D characters and these questions and, oh, wait a minute, face, female, and then the light went on. Oh. That's what it was. I'm trans.
Ta-da! Yeah, and, exactly, and you just got a note. You just got a note, Jessica, from Jeremy in Vermont. With the exception of age, Jeremy says, you 16, me 12 to 14, and cancer, everything else is all too familiar. 27 years later. And I can hear George Carlin saying in a sarcastic voice, it's not a fucking phase.
No. Excuse me. No, it's not. Let me take a quick drink here.
Sure.
I get the coughs if I go too long without liquids. So.
I had the darndest thing happen to me earlier today. And it kind of you know, when you're attuned to it and you're open to it, I got just the tiniest little dose of what some dear friends have dealt with in their lives. For some reason, I don't know, maybe I've dehydrated or something. I try to hydrate a lot, but that's the only cause I could come up with for it. But my feet and toes this afternoon started just relentlessly drawing. And oh my God, the pain. It was awful. And I asked Agnes about it, and she said, yeah, you know, it might have been those wedges you were wearing yesterday. And I said, okay, I can buy that. But I did look it up, and it's like dehydration's part of it. But, you know, I know people deal with that on a regular basis who have to deal with certain disabilities. And just that one, you know, there's an old saying that a trial lawyer taught me once. He did plaintiff's work. He worked on the side of the angels. And he said that this line worked almost every time with juries in civil suits. When you start explaining to a jury about how to attach a monetary dollar value to pain. And the term he used, or the phrase that he used, was that pain is a picture window into hell.
I would agree to that.
And it applies to pain of all forms, whether it be physical pain or psychic pain. It is as though you are looking, you're not in the ante room, you are looking right there in the living, into the, it's a picture window into hell's own living room. I need to put out some thank yous real quick.
Absolutely.
Thank you very kindly to Nina. Thank you so much, Nina. Nina matched the challenge that Ralphs put forward. So that takes us down to, 360. And Earther took us down, answering the challenge as well, to 340. And it's, you know, I hate talking about this stuff, but when we come up onto the end of the month and we're behind, it's frightening, because that's how the program exists. And then our dear, dear friend Darlene messaged me a few minutes ago and said, $100 challenge on the table in honor of Trans Day of Visibility. And congratulations to Jessica.
Well, thank you, Darlene.
We have a marvelous, kind, and caring community, and the one thing, you know, when I had that awful that experience with that awful, pathetic, miserable, shitty life excuse for a human being, the one thing that is reassuring is that the level of acceptance has been so beautiful. Everything I was afraid of, it goes away. Everything that I was afraid of, and I was afraid I was going to lose everybody and everything. And in fact, it has been exactly the opposite. And that is what drives the miserable shit-eating TERFs absolutely bananas, is that nobody likes them. Nobody likes them. Where, on the other hand, trans man, trans masculine, trans feminine, non-binary, asexual, if you look for them, if you look for love, I've been absolutely overwhelmed with kindness, and it's been the most exquisite, lovely thing I've ever known in my life, and that is why it was such a shock. You know, to sort of get that response, it was wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy just responded to Darlene's challenge, so we got $90 to go on that, and so hopefully that will be That will be answered in short order, and that'll get us down to, let's see, I said 316. That'll get us down to 160 if Darlene's challenge is met, and that'll get us down to $160, being within $160 of done. Oh, thank you for that, Randy Radar. Lack of magnesium and diabetes. Diabetes slows mineral absorption. That's a possibility. I take a magnesium supplement every day, but it's, you know, that's a possibility too. And damn, did it hurt! I hated it. Further motivation to shed this weight and get rid of my 8.5 A1C. And Charlene says, Charlene in Rogues Island, interesting program. Was Jessica trying to recall the term late effects? So that's for you to answer, Jessica. And thank you, Charlene. $20 coming your way. So that means we will be down to $70 to go on Darlene's challenge. Darlene and Charlene being founding sisters in the sorority of Leans. Signed, your ally in Rogues Island, Charlene. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you. Sorry, I interrupted like that. Thank you, Mark. Mark has now taken us down to $45 to go on Darlene's challenge in honor of the Trans Day of Visibility. Thank you, Mark. Thank you. Thank you for taking that weight off. So $45 to go on that. I'm sorry for the interruption, Jessica. Can you pick up where you were?
No. Robin, don't apologize. Having been in broadcasting 20 years and having done live on-air radio, I know exactly how it goes, especially when you're doing high school sports or another local type of broadcast, and then your equipment fails or something doesn't want to fire when you need it to.
Isn't it just delightful?
And then you have to quick do it live. I'm probably one of the few people at the station when I worked there that I could still do that. A couple of the younger guys were reliant on the technology, but I started before the computer, so.
Yeah, you're as Scott and I and Scott in San Diego and I talk about from time to time, you know what a cart deck looks like.
I've sent you the picture of me in studio.
Yes.
I played with four tracks. I played with reel to reels, and I played with 33 and a third and 45. So I'm probably one of the last of the old school DJs.
That's two of us talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to have to queue up Jesus, This Is Jimmy again. No, not on this date, and not come on back and talk to Teddy Bear. No, that song's just so creepy, so creepy. You're getting correspondence, Jessica. I want to hug you both right now. Megan says, much love to you, Robin, and to you, Jessica. Sorry for the reference, but goddess and God bless you both. Fuck TERFs. Both of you have a right to be seen, loved, and respected, and no one has a right to define your existence but you.
Well, thank you, Megan.
That is beautiful, Megan. And while it's not funny, but sometimes we give out cowbells for things that aren't funny but are, in fact, loving and kind and sweet. Erwin in Montana says to Jessica, thanks for being so open to everyone out here. I am from a rural town of 650 in 1970 in the upper Midwest as well. So I think I understand a little about your early years, Jessica, the environment you grew up in. That's Erwin in Missoula.
Thank you, Erwin. So, I had the dream, and then I was introspective for about 6 months. And then I went and saw a therapist, and shortly thereafter, I went to the wonderful Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and they have...
Is that the Greater Rochester Prosperity Zone?
the Greater Rochester Metropolitan Cove Prosperity Sphere. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
That would be the epicenter.
Yeah. The Greater Greater Metropolitan Rochester Co-Prosperity Sphere.
Yeah.
I'll have to work on that, but that goes into That's the litany fine. With good God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republicans.
Absolutely. But no, I can't say enough good things about the Mayo Clinic because I had all my dermatological, if I can speak, care and my genetics care regarding my albinism while I was growing up at the Mayo Clinic. I had the wonderful, I can't say enough positive things about the cancer care team at Mayo. They took a real shitty situation and made it as bearable as possible. And so I found myself once again at the Mayo Clinic. Oh, I should also throw in ophthalmology. In 2014, after 20 years...
The real kind, not the Rand Paul kind.
Exactly. After 20 years of having a restricted driver's license, they finally got my eyes to the point where I could drive with an unrestricted driver's license. And this is after growing up all my life being told I would never drive because I was legally blind until I was 16. And to finally have a driver's license that said, okay, you have to wear your glasses, given, and you're restricted to 55 miles an hour. That's highway speed. That's not a restriction. And I could finally take that road trip down Route 66 that I'd always wanted. Haven't done it yet. And I still have the Triumph I've got to fix up.
But yeah, I got a vested interest in the Triumph being fixed.
Yeah. But yeah, that's one of the reasons why I got the Triumph, because I wanted to take my victory lap after twice defeating cancer and getting my license unrestricted. And I wanted to drive from Grant Park in Chicago, where Route 66 starts, and down to Santa Monica Pier.
That's a great sound effect you just made. That's a great sound effect you just made.
Actually, with a finely tuned European four banger, it would probably be more like a...
I think you've got a future in radio, Jessica.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Broadcasting live from the...
Yeah. Yeah, so my therapist told me that I should look at the TISC, as they call it, the Transgender and Intersex Care Clinic or Care Center, I can't remember what that last C stands for, at Mayo. And I went there and I talked to Dr. Napole, who's my endocrinologist, and my social worker, Katie Ubel. And I don't know if they want their name, but I have to give them credit. And they got me set up with my HRT starting in August of 2019. And on March 31st, 2020, I came out to the world.
So this is literally your 1 year trans birthday.
Yes, it is. I'm 1 year old. Yay. So, you know, and even though she's not, technically part of the TISC, I was going to give her a shout out a couple of weeks ago, or last week, or whenever it was. I was talking and I mentioned working on my voice, which I'm not doing very well today. I'm having an off day. I ran a bunch of errands, so I'm a little fatigued. But I have to thank Dr. Orbello in the ENT department, who's my voice therapist, and helping me to find my voice, so to speak. So if there's anyone out there in the horn community who's trans, closeted, or out, and you're in the upper Midwest and can get there, I can't speak for Scottsdale or Jacksonville, Florida. Those two campuses for the Mayo Clinic as well, they might have a transgender center too. But if you can get to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, I can't say enough good things about it. And I'm a this is non-paid. I have no financial stake in this. So.
That's competent care is so critical to all of this. And just yes. As a matter of curiosity, nobody in your care team having analyzed you and folded, spindled, and mutilated you, have told you that you aren't who you know you are, have they?
No. They've been very supportive. And yet
they must be wrong, and some freaking TERF is right. Science is wrong, they're right. Do I have that right? I mean, do I have the gist of it?
Well, in their universe, yes. The team at the Mayo Clinic will absolutely validate you and take care of you. So.
Fantastic.
Not to turn that into a little infomercial, but
No. When you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because you in Minnesota have a divided legislature, do you not?
I believe so.
At present, yeah. And so when you say that there is competent care, you know, with a real emphasis on the word care, when you say there's competent care at the Mayo Clinic, that is actually vitally important information, given that, for instance, the state of Arkansas just made it legal to deny medical care to every trans person in the entire state. Tennessee, yeah, doing similar things. Alabama doing similar things. Mississippi trying to do similar things. It is a viral outbreak of hatred all over the country. And so people need care. Trans people need care. And what we are experiencing in 2021 is what our brothers and sisters in the other stripes of the LGBTQ flag experienced throughout the horrors of the AIDS pandemic, the HIV/AIDS crisis. And crisis it was and remains. And, you know, still no cure. And yet, it's a virus. So, it's necessary to point out the places that are still humane and decent in this country, as opposed to the barbaric stand states like Arkansas and Talabama and Tennistan and you know, South Dakota stan.
Well, you know, and I'll point out that when I set foot in the care center at Mayo, this was the height of Nitwit Nero's reign, when he was thumping his chest and saying, strip trans people of their medical care and their rights. And the Mayo Clinic still said, we don't care. Come to us. We will help you. You want to talk a shining beacon on the hill? There it is.
Indeed. Indeed. And so, you know, you've been, this is your transversary. Have you been on your medical transition for the same period of time?
Well, like I said, I've done HRT starting in August of 2019. I started with Spiral, like you have. I went on that for about 6 weeks. And then in October, I got my first injection of estradiol. And then about a year ago, on March 16th, I've got progesterone. So that's my regimen right now. And my my social workers were going to get back to me here this month, but they might be running behind. But they put in a petition with the surgical group so we can start looking at the various procedures and deciding a timeline of when to do things and what things will be done. So,
and it's kind of daunting, isn't it?
Well, they're at about a two and a half year backlog right now for bottom surgery. And I haven't made a decision on that yet, but I know I want to have some things done to my face. And, I want top surgery. So,
well,
so
you know,
that's the timeline I'm looking at right now. So
you mentioned, that process, and you know, it's funny how quickly things change, because I got started and I was just going to kind of stealth along, and I'm going to stealth along lasted about a month. And then it became intolerable not to live authentically. And so from about October to that New Year's Eve 2020, it was actually really uncomfortable, because I wanted to tell this community whom I love so dearly that I was living my authentic life. And so it was a real big deal when Terry helped me come out on New Year's Eve. And so part of that was like, well, you know, I don't gotta have any surgeries. I don't gotta necessarily do that. And that changed too. And the biggest thing standing in the way of that was paying for it, because it's brutally expensive. But but thanks to Joseph Robinette Biden, the president of the United States of America, who, recognizing the havoc that has been wrought by a year of ignoring a pandemic, you know, that Nitwit Nero did, reopened and somehow or another sort of tweaked the Affordable Care Act. I don't know quite how it worked, but I was able to get health insurance. And I've got it for the first time ever, the first time probably in 10 years or so. And yeah, I did go and look. And yes, my coverage covers in-network gender confirmation surgery at 90%. And I have thus far found two in-network doctors.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I have a consultation in June.
Great.
And it is possible, not entirely likely, But it is possible that on my little transiversary, September 15th, that I will have the gatekeeper letters in place, and I will actually have gender confirmation surgery scheduled for possibly sometime late this year. It is possible that I could be medically whole by New Year's Day, or at least a little
wonderful.
Bit after.
That
and
is wonderful.
It scares me witless. Because sitting here talking about this, and you laid out all the things that you've had to undergo surgically. The last time I had surgery, I was 4, and it was a tonsillectomy. And I have not, with very limited exceptions, you know, things like, you know, colonoscopies and endoscopies and things like that. I haven't been touched. But it strikes me that there's a big damn difference between something that is existential relative to your continued existence because of a disease process versus something that one looks forward to eagerly as something to make you the complete human being that you desperately want to be.
Mm-hmm. And let me drop the jaws of a few non-trans horn family out there who might be curious how much we're talking when we talk about some of these procedures. Bottom surgery, the last time I priced it out, it's about the price of a new Volkswagen GTI.
Sounds about right. It can run between the surgeon fees and the hospital fees. It can run anywhere from 20 to how much do you want to pay?
Well, 35 is what I saw. But I'm sure it varies from hospital to hospital.
And then the breast augmentation surgery, 5 to 9. And then facial feminization surgery is how much do you want to spend?
Exactly.
I mean, there are trans women who had the means to do it out there who've dropped 6 digits into their faces.
I think I read one young lady down in Australia invested the equivalent of $2 million for the whole body.
Dear God, for that you should be able to get yourself cloned.
One would think. But, that's... But what price is your sanity?
Right. What price your authenticity?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, gender confirmation surgery is not a walk in the park.
No,
we have a
no.
dear friend. And, we have a dear friend in this community who underwent it, I think, about a year ago. And last I checked, she is the happiest she's ever been in her entire life.
Well, yay for her! And I don't mean to come across as snarky. I'm genuine when I say that. But I just wanted to point out here too. Anybody who's closeted or trans and isn't on HRT and has no interest in surgery, you're still valid.
Absolutely. I was coming around to that. There are no rules. There's no secret lodge handshake.
We
live how we have to live.
Exactly. I have a acquaintance in the in the support group that I visit in Rochester. Well, we don't do it physically anymore because of the pandemic, but, and she is not on hormones and she has no interest in surgery. she's grown her hair out. She has a couple prosthetics, and that's it. And she's perfectly happy.
Good.
I'm sure there's people who don't even...
Blessings upon her.
Yeah. And she's just as valid a trans woman as I am. Or just as valid as somebody who's had the complete works done, you know? It's... The phrase we like to use in the community is, your mileage may vary.
YMMV.
And... Exactly. And... It doesn't matter. You are who you are. Your journey is your journey. And your journey is just as valid as my journey and Robin's and Terry Ellen's and anybody else who's going through this. We are all valid. And we are all trans. So.
And we will not go back in the closet.
I have told people I would rather die than going back. I will not go. I will. If they dragged me kicking and screaming, I would fight. I would not go gentle into that good night, to quote Dylan Thomas. No. 25 years was enough. I'm not going back.
Yeah. 53 years was plenty. And. You know, that's not me saying that I'm by no means any sort of ascetic or saint or anything like that. But it's enough. It's damned well enough. And the pain is enough. And the taste of freedom and the taste of authenticity is breathtakingly beautiful. It's like And any of the people who have paved the way for us, who have made our path, who have exited that hateful space into the bright, warm light of day before us, know it. And some paid a much, much fiercer price than anything you and I, you know, I'm sitting here pissing and moaning about, you know, somebody being nasty to me on the internet. Oh, Jesus, Robin, grow up. That doesn't even begin to compare to the beatings, the murders, the stabbings, the torment, the torture, the sadistic joy that people take in hurting people. Any of the stripes in the rainbow flag. And so many have sacrificed so much, and we stand on the shoulders of giants, Jessica. I know I do.
And I am.
And by the way, just a note coming from Matt in San Francisco, who has known that path and helped make that path. He's a little, not much older, but a little older than me, and has known. The bigotry, has known the hate, has known the struggle. He's talked about what it was like growing up gay and being the only gay kid. But Matt just sent us a note. TERFs hate. Matt says, as I continue my evolution toward a higher spirituality, I still find a phrase very comforting when processing the hate. Fuck 'em and feed 'em catfish. Don't make Jessica cough, Matt. But yeah, I don't know why it works for me, Matt says, but if it ain't broke, fuck 'em, feed 'em catfish. Yeah. Yeah. You know, those channel cats that taste like dirt.
Yeah. Those catfish the size of Volkswagen Beetles below the lock and dams on the Mississippi River.
Oh, we got those on the in the locks and dams on the Tennessee, too. I've seen them hauled out. It's terrifying. But, yeah, just not fit to eat. So feed it to the TERFs. And,
absolutely.
And, again, more thanks. This is wonderful. Roberto, thank you. And thank you to our pal, Haley. Thank you, Haley, a sister. We are done with Darlene's challenge. That took us down to 135 to go. And then Mark stepped in. Mark, thank you so much. We are $35. Thanks to Mark. We are $35 away from finishing March fully funded. Thank Excellent. You, Mark. That is so tremendous, so powerful. Thank you for all you do and all that you all do to make sure that this conversation continues. I had a note from Darlene in Connecticut, who put the challenge forward. Yeah, says Darlene, there are plenty of gross, vile, repressed, and miserable people with deep-seated issues like that troll who must try to bring you down to somehow justify whatever's going on with her, or them, or they, or him. I closed our little conversation by saying, good day, sir, to that person, because, well, you want to play the misgender game? I can play the misgender game. But it doesn't make them any happier, Darlene says. They project their self-hatred onto those they think are easy targets. Ultimately, what that person said and did really had nothing to do with you. Someone like that's too far gone. You can be proud for rooting her out from under the rock she slimes around under and shining a spotlight on her internal ugliness. I almost... emphasis on the word, almost feel pity for her. Almost. Yeah. And so Jeremy just got us down to $30 to go. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you so much. By the way, Jeremy says you can probably get cloned in some country in a black market deal, which means a new rush may be growing and living as we speak. Oh, you guys got it. You just got it. You got to work that. It's probably sit there gurgling in its little clone incubator sack going, attention, earthlings. Right. That's just disgusting.
You watched Doctor Who, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. One thing, Matt says the fuck 'em and feed 'em catfish $15 challenge is on the table. So we'll finish funding for March with an hour to spare if somebody or somebody's answer Matt's fuck 'em and feed 'em catfish $15 challenge. Thank you, Matt. Thank you so very much. Fuck 'em, feed 'em catfish. Yes. Thank you, Matt. I am familiar with Doctor Who, and in fact, I saw a TARDIS skirt the other day that was just like, oh my God.
Oh.
It was a skirt with a TARDIS print.
One of the more amazing cosplays I've seen is a girl who had a TARDIS dress, and she could unhook it and open the front, and it went from being just like the police box. And the inside of the flap, when she opened it, had the console room on the inside. It's just amazing. And it lit up. It's amazing. But, the reason you mentioned Rush in that tube, and I've thought of those amorphous blobs they had during the Baker era inside the Daleks. If you ever remember, then they showed the actual beings inside the armor. That's the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah. Oh, and I got a couple of questions. We might want to take a run at from Brother Deacon Asa. One of which was, do you mind elaborating for those of us who don't know? What does realizing that one is trans do to one's sexual preference? If you're comfortable with it, of course. Not meaning to put you on the spot, meaning both of us. I think we can take a run at that, Jessica. Or, I mean, I can, because it's really kind of bizarre. And I don't mean any insult. It's kind of bizarre to try to answer because of the exigencies that are that exist around transition. And in many ways, I think for both transmasculine and transfeminine. But also, Brother Deacon Asa points out, you know, you may want to try a trip to Iran. The Islamic Republic recognizes transgender people and even subsidizes the GCS. Why would you do it in Iran? Great question. Those surgeons perform more surgeries per capita than any other country. All manner of enhancement surgery is extremely popular in Iran. It's almost assumed that one will have some sort of enhancement surgery in one's lifetime, trans or not trans, trans or cis. Though there's the most amount of medical expertise where it concerns these procedures. Plus, it's between a third and one half the cost of doing it here in North America. And then when you leave, yeah, I guess you have to leave in a burqa. but, you know, that's another thing to bring up is Thailand. Probably the most advanced, the most advances in that in those sorts of surgeries are happening over there at places like the Suporn Clinic.
Well, and in Thailand, the culture is that trans people are celebrated. They are recognized as being special. I can't remember all the intricacies of it, but they hold us in very high regard over there.
And from a strictly economic or financial standpoint, it's really wild if you can get there. And the whole, you know, getting there, the visa, the hotels, you know, all that stuff is expensive. And then, you know, there's the 26-hour flight or whatever. I don't know, 26 hours to Sydney, and then you hop and then you hop a puddle jumper to Bangkok. But just in terms of the procedures, you can do like breast augmentation, facial feminization, and bottom surgery for the cost of a single bottom surgery in the United States.
Mm-hmm. I believe it. But no, when you were talking about flights, I had the great fortune of spending 2 years abroad in Japan.
Oh my God!
And
dream.
And to fly from Minneapolis, St. Paul to Tokyo was 13 hours, and that was a hell of a flight. And even though it's 11 hours back, that still ain't no picnic.
No. See, back in my smoking days, which I am not anymore, I would, the idea of I mean, I did 8 hours to and from Western Europe. And as a nicotine addict, it was hell. It was awful. I mean, I ran through Charles de Gaulle hollering, "Où est le sal de fumée?" Until somebody said, basically, not inside, can't, no, got to go outside. And so I'm standing there at customs going, come on, stamp the fucking passport. I got a cigarette up the cigarette for 8, 9 hours. And it was the same thing coming back from Amsterdam to Atlanta. And then we got held on the plane because, like, they bumped the terminal with the plane or something, and nobody could get off, and they couldn't get the jet port thing attached to the door. And it's like, really? Because Atlanta is one of those few airports where you can still smoke. There's a smoking room on every concourse. And it's beautiful because I don't have to worry about that anymore. And the reason I am breathing better is because I transitioned. Because it was a sine qua non. Sorry, you can't have your transition. You choose, Robin, choose. You want to transition or do you want to smoke? And that was the easiest choice I have ever made. And where before every other attempt I'd made to quit smoking was like, oh, Jesus, this is horrible, this is horrible, this is horrible. This time it was affirming, it was uplifting, and it was exciting. And I don't recall particularly suffering. I recall some weirdness. Like, constant, my hand involuntarily reaching for the cigarettes and lighter that just weren't there anymore. But agony? Painful? No. No. It was, and so, you know, that's living proof. That's living proof that it is beneficial. Do I like the weight that I've gained since quitting cigarettes? No. But as soon as I've got the spare scratch, I'm going to join a gym after I've had my second shot. And every evening after the program's over, I'll just, you know, I mean, it's one of those places that's open 24/7. So, you know, I'll just put on something I can work out in, take Ferg to work, stop at the gym, half an hour on the treadmill, half an hour on the bike, maybe a little bit of, you know, weight training for tone and shit, and come home and sleep like a baby because I'm exhausted. Seems like a plan.
I was going to say, I point out to people, too, that I'm cutting back on the soda I'm drinking. I'm eating more vegetables, even though I was already eating fruits and vegetables before then. Cutting back on my red meat, more lean protein. And I'm making a more concerted effort to exercise, even though I have a job where I'm physically active. You know, I work maintenance for the local county government, changing light bulbs and hauling out garbage and painting and whatever they need getting done. And so I'm active and I'm moving, but I'm trying to do more. And this, like you said, is just, it's a fresh start. And I'm making a concerted effort to be healthier. So you want to talk affirmation in your lifestyle?
Yeah.
We're living proof of it.
I have never loved being alive. And I've said in the past, I love life. I do. I absolutely do. And it has something perhaps to do with the fact that I know that this ain't dress rehearsal. I'm not down here to learn to plink a freaking harp and polish a halo. This is it. And I love life more now than I ever have, ever.
Well, kind of along those lines, let me say, you know, having gone through the cancer, hell yeah. I will take every day and celebrate. I bought myself a Bulova wristwatch.
Nice.
On what would have been my fifth anniversary of surviving cancer. And having gone through it the second time, I refer to my original day of being in remission as my celebration of life day. But I have that watch. And I look at the face and I watch that little second hand tick around. And I watch the seconds go to minutes, minutes to hours, days, weeks, whatever. And it's a physical reminder that that's a second, minute, hour, whatever, that I may not have otherwise had. And so I look at that time, and I cherish it.
Well, you know what I say at the end of every program. I thank everyone who listens to this program for sharing their precious finite time on this planet, engaging and conversing and joining in camaraderie and common cause with this little community. And I mean that to the absolute depths of my soul. By the way, Jeremy in Vermont said, 9 days since a Coke Zero has touched my lips, and I have no plans on going back. I already have enough religious crazies that need to see us dead without me helping them. And that factors into it, too. I'm not going to do their fucking work for them. And so I've got to, you know, I got more stuff I got to do. I got to shed this damn weight. And I got to get that A1C back down. And I will. And warm weather's going to come and I'm going to be on the trails and like I said, I'll be on the treadmill or a bike or something. And I'm going to be in better shape than I've ever been in my life. I hope. I gave up pop, I haven't had one in eons. And Brother Deacon Asa just reminded me last Friday, how did I miss this? Tomorrow is 200 days since I quit smoking.
Oh, congratulations.
That just blows my mind.
Give yourself a cowbell.
Oh, well, thank you. I will. And I'll share that with Brother Deacon Asa for keeping up with that kind of thing. It's wonderful. And, hey, Jessica, I'm going to bring on our pal Arnold. We need to address the sexuality thing, too.
Absolutely.
I'm going to bring on our pal Arnold and see what Arnold has to say, because Arnold always brings a lot to the party. Are you there, Arnold?
I am here, Robin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Jessica, this is Arnold. Arnold,
good.
This is Jessica.
Pleasure.
Hi, Jessica. So I wanted to jump in for a couple minutes. At some point early on, you had mentioned number pads and calculators and telephones, and I've been having just a nightmare of a time lately, especially, let's say, in the year of COVID, with credit card machines and point of sales terminals in general when out in the world. And they're all different. There's no standardized one. You know, some corporate stores will have the same one, you know, in different locations. But just an absolute nightmare. I've had a couple of instances where the terminal is very hard to see, so I'll ask the clerk to do it, and it's like you would think I was asking them they'd like to join me in space or something, with the just the way they respond, and the lack of consideration, the lack of help, the lack of any kind of human decency. Just amazing to me. So whatever you were talking about, the number pad, is where I came in. And I just couldn't help but going there. And then to kind of go on the conversation, to add to the conversation, I grew up, my dad was a drummer and a mechanic. So there was always different kinds of car customers. And there was always different kinds of people at the recording studio. And so, without getting into details or giving away anybody's deal, I had interacted with all kinds. Let me just say this: interacted with all kinds of people by the time I was 14 years old, and so you know, I was exposed to things and to people's choices and things, and I don't understand people that don't understand. And that's all I want to say on that topic is, without, because I don't want to say anything I'm not supposed to say or offend anybody.
There's no such thing on this program, Arnold.
You know what I mean. I know I'm not going to step on anybody's toes. I'm not an expert, but I have friends in upstate New York. One of whom has passed away, Randy Steele and her wife Felicia. And both of those women had transitioned way before I knew them. And, it was very, very interesting experience as a visually impaired person, because when I talked to them on the phone, I about voices, I had a vision of what both of them looked like, and it never came up. And then, so when I met them, I was like, oh, you know, a couple of chicks, you know, and we had radio in common. Randy was blind, like very similar to my vision, different condition, but very similar to me. And like me, you know, took no shit her whole career. And, she had a lot of crosses to bear and kicked ass. Built an awesome studio radio station up in Woodstock, and with very limited vision, and just a passion for radio, passion for know, the correct side of broadcasting, the correct type of broadcasting, freedom of speech, you know, and alike. And just amazing to me, like I read your Facebook post about, and that's why I asked you what a TERF was. I have no idea why people have no acceptance for the fact that we're all fucking human. And
in terms of transness, Arnold, we're just the wrong kind of human. See, there are right kinds of humans and wrong kinds of humans. And the TERFs know exactly
Well, fuck them. Holy fuck them.
Feed them catfish. Yes.
Not in a good way.
Fuck them, feed them catfish.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. You know, because I just don't, you know, as a disabled person, and I never use that word really, and I always say that when I say that, you deal with a lot of bullshit in this world, and a lot of ignorance, a lot of just stupid. I just assume when it comes to being like blind or deaf or whatever your physical disability is, I just assume that those are the people that get picked on and that get, you know, marginalized. And then I forget that everybody, and I said this when I was like 12, 13 years old, there is no normal. Normal is a fucking crock of shit. So whether religious people think they're normal or, you know, some cowboy thinks he's normal, no one's fucking normal. There is no normal. Pain is relative and there's no fucking normal.
Normal is a setting on a dryer.
And that's it. Fucking A. Yeah. So I just called to add my experience with the point of sale things, talk about Randy for a few minutes and, you know, just say that.
Arnold, you don't have to get in a hurry. Nobody gets rushed off on this program. You know that. I mean, this is three radio. This is three radio people sitting around rapping at this point.
You know what? Actually, if you don't want to rush me off, let me tell you one more radio thing then.
Okay, I'm game.
I'll take the opportunity. I'll rant then. So I do some work with Bob Fass, and Bob's not doing so good right now. So what I can say is he's currently back in the hospital. He had been home over the last 7 weeks. He's been in and out of the hospital, and the most recent thing is like a viral pneumonia. So anybody who's familiar with Bob, you know, send well wishes. So in finding, and I hadn't, because of COVID and stuff, I had been kind of in my own world. I wasn't paying attention to what was going on there because they moved to North Carolina. So I was talking to a mutual friend and they were like, "Hey, did you hear about Bob?" I'm like, "No, I didn't hear about Bob." So I called his wife and found out he's in the hospital, blah, blah, blah. It's about 5 weeks ago. So I said, "Well, who's doing the program?" "Oh, they're not even carrying the program." And I had made a promise to Bob in 2013 that for as long as he was alive, I would, if he needed me, I would help him stay on the radio. And because all the people in New York City had told him that the broadcast from his home was going to cost $50,000. And a friend of mine said, "You don't need $50,000. You need Arnold." And so that's beautiful. How that happened. But I did it for like five. So, I mean, and it was closer to 10 because he wanted a Mac, but that's beside the point. Doesn't matter. So who's doing the program? Well, nobody. So I called Bill, who's the longtime assistant, and I said, "Well, let's do a program." I said, "I'll engineer it. I said, I'll produce. You know, you just get on and talk." And I said, "I'm there for you, whatever you want to do." I lined up some guests. And he said, "All right, we'll do it." So, and Bob's style for that program is like, it's like chaos. Like there's really no, there's supposed to be a rhyme and a reason, but there really isn't. And that's, so I try to assimilate that as much as possible. So, you know, you engineer some dead air, you know, you engineer some gremlin stuff. It's just part of the, I like the chaos. So we do two shows. And in the second program, in hour two, a guy calls up from the postal union, retired, and is just ranting about unions. And he's not saying anything wrong. He's just not an expert. And he covered a lot of bases, and I really felt I had this feeling that, you know, I could really bring, and you know who I was going to bring to the party. So I floated this idea. Wow, the pushback. Wow, the pushback. So I didn't get to merge the two. You know, I didn't get to bring my expert friend, to New York Air. Now I'm allowed, and this is what's crazy. I'm allowed to be there, but our our expert friend isn't allowed to be there. Isn't that crazy? So
God,
you know, it's it's fun. So this week we're going to do a best of. I won't name anybody, but I was asked to do. I have a bunch of Bob air checks. I have like 7 years air checks. So, you know, I was asked by the station manager, you know, can I put together like Bob in his own words? And I said, absolutely. You know, I'll give you a few of them actually. And this way, instead of having, you know, me or Bill or somebody else fill in for Bob, you will just hear Bob. And I felt like, you know, I'm producing this excellent program, spending a week getting ready. I have guests lined up, and at the last minute she says, oh, because of your choice of guests, you're not doing a show. Okay. Okay.
People.
You know, so...
You there, Arnold?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I just heard myself on my monitor.
Oh, your audio is good on this end. And you know, I find it interesting that you know, both you and Jessica have and have had visual disabilities. And I thought that, you know, I don't know. I thought maybe y'all might compare notes on that, because I was actually thinking of you, Arnold, when Jessica was talking about what she'd been through and the thrill of finally getting to drive at highway speeds.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? I mean, it's funny about the driving while blind thing. I don't think I've ever talked about it on the air. But one of the things, you know, I have autosomal congenital cataracts, and they can be operated on now. Like, if you have a child who's born with them now, they can be removed before 6 weeks old, and you'll have some issues with vision, but basically you'll be able to drive and play sports and that kind of stuff. But growing up with my vision, so 100% light goes in, about 6% of light comes back. That's how dense the cataract is. 2400 at 1 inch is the visual acuity. So like for reading and stuff like that, it's all nose length. It's all, you know, I use the computer at nose length, that kind of stuff. And I don't want to brag. So I've been driving equipment and machines since 1987. It's the first time I was put on something with a motor, and like let the driver a lawnmower around. And, you know, it was a little awkward. I've ridden bicycles in a bunch of major cities in the country. Most notably New York, Vegas, Chicago, Philadelphia. I've been in, I'm not going to share any details. I've been in one accident that was pretty horrendous, but it wasn't visual related. It was just like the law of averages. You know, you're out on the road, shit happens. As a bicyclist, I've been in like, you know, numerous accidents unrelated to vision, just like, just because you're on a bicycle and life is like completely unfair. Bicyclists are like victims, whether you're blind or not. The fastest I've driven was on a motorcycle. And here's the irony to that. When you have vision like mine, you can see like the line, like the middle, you can see like the yellow line, you can see like the white line, you know, within reason, a few feet in front of you. But you can't read the speedometer. Think about this. You can't read the speedometer. You can't read any of the gauges. Now, I know what all the lights mean. So if like the red light comes on, I got no oil. I know what that is because it's a big, big, bright ass red light, right? But I can't see the speedometer. So I know where 100 is. I know where 130 is. So I know on this one road where I live now, back in 99 or 2000, I did 130 plus on a Honda motorcycle I restored for a relative. And like, I'm not bragging. Like, it's just, that's what I, part of my frustration is I live in this fucking purgatory. And my father and my mother were really cool when I was growing up, and they let me have a bunch of opportunities and a bunch of life experiences that, you know, are rites of passage that when you're visually impaired, you're often just, you know, never fucking do that. Stay away from that stuff. You know, if you tell someone you're blind, it's like, you might as well be a fucking alien. You're gonna trip, you're gonna fall, you're gonna fuck stuff up. I can't bring you to strange places. You know, I've had guys who wanted to hire me for contract work say, well, you know, I know you're good where you know where you are, but what if I bring you into a new environment? How you not gonna fall down? You know, fucking take a chance. How about that? Like, how do we know you're not gonna fall down?
Right.
People always talk about liability when you say, oh, you know, I ride my four-wheeler on my property. You know, well, what about the liability? Well, what about the fucking liability on your property? What about the liability when you drive your tractor or you plow snow? You know, so you have insurance. Oh, okay, so I have insurance. So, you know, it's crazy to me that we're to assume in America or anywhere in the world, you can own property, but you would not maintain it. So if I'm blind or any other disability, name one, pick one, and pick several even, you have to live, you have to survive. And if you have skills that are beyond your disability, why do you have to justify them to anybody? I have a dear friend who always says, you know, it's not skill that I can do what I do. It's luck. All right. So it's fucking luck. But however the fuck it is, it is.
Yeah. You know what? I guess it's probably a little likelihood of it being able to happen, but I'll bet Jessica could use a little help with that TR7 out there.
Oh, a little bit.
How far along are you in getting her road ready, Jessica?
Well, see, I made life a little difficult for me. There were 115,000 TR7s built between 1974 and 1982. Mine is a 1975, the first year. There were 6,000 of those built. Mine was halfway through the production run. So I have a very early example of the car. And
that means any revisions that were made happened like after.
Exactly. And I want her to be as she was in 1975. So I'm making life more difficult on top of already having a rare British car and having to source parts for it as is. Now I want to go back to a point in time where finding parts for that are even more scarce. because the plethora of parts out there are for the 77 to 82s.
Yeah, that's the restorator. The restorator's art, you know.
Yes.
That's part of the art, you know. You have to, like, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say it's mostly the engine stuff that's getting hard to find. Like the original, I've got an air pump. It took me forever to find an EGR valve for it. And now I have to find the vacuum lines, the fuel lines, which I can go to Napa and get. But
what state are you in?
Minnesota.
Why worry about the EGR?
Well, that's because that's how she was in 75. I'm that.
Well, I mean, it could be present and it could. I'm sorry.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that's how meticulous I'm doing with this restoration. So, and then
that's really cool.
And then the only other two things are cleaning out the fuel tank, getting the or making sure the fuel sending unit works, and then I want to swap out the rear axle from a 4-speed to a 5-speed. Because a previous owner had a 5-speed in it, and it was originally a 4-speed car. So, there's one or two big things to do and a bunch of little things. So,
little really annoying things.
And a couple things are the unobtainium parts that you really have to scour for to get. But fortunately for me, I have friends in England with connections.
Nice.
And people here,
you know, a guy. States.
I know a few guys.
I know a guy.
One of them is in.
We did a Range Rover.
Go ahead.
We did a Range Rover a few years ago. It came from another shop, and it has it's like a 2000-ish. 99-01-ish, and it has a layered fuse box. So, like, you have a layer of silicone and relays and stuff, and then you have another layer and another layer, and so some of the solder pins go all the way through, and then some stop more. So what happens is, anyway, they get hot, right? And the solder bleeds out of them, and you can't. So the fuse box becomes basically like a paperweight. All kinds of problems. The windows go up and down. All kinds of shit happens. So this particular unit would run like 30 minutes and shut off. So it was driving this other shop crazy. They told the customer it wasn't fixable. Blah blah blah. Gets towed here. And we figured it out. My dad and I, and both blind. And I was able to get the stuff from. I had to buy it from the UK. And it's funny because. They're run-of-the-mill trucks. So the place I have the notes someplace. The guy I called over there was like, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. You need this. And it was like, well, the thing he sent, the kit that he sent was meticulous, and it was everything you could possibly need to swap this thing out, and it just solved our problem. It was just great. But
you may find this interesting, Jessica. Dave number 11 just dropped a note and said, even California wouldn't require a smog pump and an EGR valve on a 74. That's just masochistic.
Well, like I said, I've got an early car. I've got a history degree. And this is my restoration project, and I'm, you know, and what I've got are stories.
Okay, I'm gonna butt in.
Okay, Mark. Arnold, butt in.
I can't help myself. So with the EGR, all you got to do is it can be aesthetically perfect, and it could have every conceivable vacuum line. It could be aesthetically perfect. It could be there. No problem. Just block it off, and we're good. See, with this? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, they do sell a delete plate that covers that if you want to bypass it. So,
Well, you could just sandwich the delete plate, like use the delete plate as a gasket. I've done that, like we did that on Chevys and Fords from the 87 to 93 year, where they cause a lot of drivability issues, you know, so you just take the unit off, and the older computers don't care if the flow's not there as long as it's still on the circuit. So you simply block it off, and, you know, sometimes it'll bring up a light now and then, but in our emissions, 96 is the last year, first year that they can plug in. So anything previous, anything pre 96, you don't have to worry about, it just passes a visual. So like in the case of your EGR, you just plug it and it's there. So like even for taking pictures for the historic side of it, you know, if you used like a thin, a block off plate, you know, you wouldn't be able to notice it in a photograph, let's say. Cause I know what you mean about, and I totally respect, like, even if you make it functional, like I'm not knocking that. Like I get it. But I mean, I'm a snob when it comes to the way that I do things. And I would always try to go, I maximize efficiency. That's my kink. And so anything that.
Time. Just a second.
Time.
You just got a cowbell for I maximize efficiency. That's my kink.
All right. So wait. You have to give yourself a cowbell from like a half hour ago or better when you said the thing about Iran and, you know, you have to leave in a burqa.
Yeah.
Well, that was cowbell.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I take them where I can get them, Arnold.
Well, I wasn't sure if I was listening on the phone. I wasn't sure if I was on or not, and I wanted to laugh like so really bad, and I wasn't like, oh, it was so good.
You know, we and Arnold and Jessica, tell me if you've experienced this. I have spent a lifetime laughing at myself because the way I was raised, you have to be able to laugh at yourself or you'll spend all your time crying. And there was enough time spent crying. So
I consider myself a master of self-deprecating humor. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, the photo I posted with my Trans Day of Visibility post, I went down to the New River Gorge Overlook and took several selfies just to go with it because I wanted to put my best authentic self foot forward. And I'm terrible at selfies. Jesus Christ, I'm awful at selfies. Oh, I'm just so bad. I'm okay if I'm shooting in portrait, but if I go to landscape, I always look at the screen instead of the camera, so it always looks like I'm looking off somewhere else, you know, because on an iPhone the camera's in the middle of the top. Yep. And so I was taking a bunch of these, and I've got this lovely backdrop of the New River Gorge, the New River, the railroad bridge across the New River. You couldn't ask for more. And so I shot a number of these things, just hoping that one would be okay. Hey. And I get home and I'm sitting, the program's over and I'm sitting here doing the upload and everything. And I saw one and I just started howling. I couldn't help myself. It was the funniest damn thing I'd seen in quite a while. And Agnes hollers through the wall and says, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "Oh my God. Oh my God. Wait till you see this picture." I said, "Honey, it looks like there's a hand reaching up over my shoulder to drag me back into the gorge." Because I had my left hand up, sort of, you know, touching my little butterfly necklace, and it looks completely disembodied. It looks like Thing from the Addams Family is getting ready to either grope me or kill me. I mean, it was like, oh, I don't know, like something out of a George Romero movie.
You have to be able to laugh at yourself.
Oh, it was, it, I mean, maybe it doesn't. Yeah. Maybe it doesn't come across on radio, but God, I didn't stop laughing for about half an hour. And Agnes, bless her, is very, very careful about not laughing at me, and she won't. She doesn't like it when I make fun of myself. But I sent her the picture, and I heard this sound. I heard this sound. And I heard, it's okay, honey. Let it go. Oh, it was a magic. It was one of those.
My vision.
Yeah.
I can't control my eye motion, right? So when I do selfies, I'll take the camera and, like, you know, especially like you're on these godforsaken dating sites or something, and a person will be like, you know, send me a picture. And it's like a nightmare. It's like, send you a picture. It's like, oh my, like. Yeah, let me look through my camera reel until I have one I can stand, you know. I don't want one right now. You want one right now. Oh, that means I got to hold my eyes still some freaking how, right? So, you know, you take a dozen pictures till you find one that's, like, you know, tolerable. And then what you said about making fun of yourself, I mean, look, I look like what I look like. I care, but I don't care. You know, if people start with the blind jokes, the difference between giving a shit and giving a shit is this. If people are laughing with you, fine. If they're laughing at you, give me a stick and I'll make right real quick. But, you know, if we're all laughing together, that's totally fine. You know, I don't care one way or the other. You know, it's all good. You know,
I didn't publish it, but it was precious. It just, my God.
I have to go before it rains here. I'm going to go. I love the program. Talk to you guys soon.
Hey, Arnold. Take care, my friend. I'm glad you called. Thanks.
Thanks, Arnold.
Arnold's just awesome. To hang out with Arnold is to just have the experience of a lifetime. Arthur, on the other hand, said, "I'm too ugly for self-deprecating humor." Really? I don't think so. We got about 24 minutes left in the program, and we got $15 to go to match the Fuck 'em, Feed 'em Catfish Challenge, courtesy of Matt, and we will be done with March, and that will be magnificent. I wanted to ask you, we do have a couple of topics yet to cover, Jessica. One, you're married.
Yes, I am.
How has that all gone?
It's gone fairly well. I mean, we've had our arguments and our tense moments, but for the majority, and I was going to give my wife, Susan, a wonderful shout out, and I really can't tell her enough how much I appreciate all she has done, standing with me and supporting me through this. And it just makes that journey all the more easier. And I think you can agree to that with Agnes.
Yes, it makes it ever so much more bearable and. I am forever grateful for the mercies and the compassion, because it can't be easy.
She just walked out of the, she just walked in and gave me kissy faces. So,
oh, hi, Susan. How long have y'all been together?
Robin says hi, by the way. Did you hear her?
I did.
Okay. In fact, She's so tenacious, and she stands up for me when the TERFs come attacking and whatnot.
So you've experienced that too?
I've had gender critical, and I've had TERFs attack me on Twitter, and we talk about how supportive the community is. I've pointed them out to a few of the members of the community and they've rallied the troops, and we just show no mercy, and we go in and block, report. Some of them have stood up and fired off a few salvos of their own. So it's wonderful how the community can come together and protect each other.
You know, maybe that's why that person did it via messenger instead of doing it publicly, because they recognized they would have been buried.
I've had instances where a couple of friends or minor acquaintances have also said things on Facebook, and, you know, like you too, I've also had a few oddballs pop up, and my friends come right out of left and right field and just bury them. No mercy. In fact, I was going to mention Susan made herself a t-shirt here not too long ago that's just perfect for her. She's got one of those Cricut machines so she can do custom stuff. And it's a like a rainbow pride outline of a bear, and then stenciled inside it says Mama.
Nice.
They're in the bedroom on the dresser. Because that's what she is. She's a mama bear. You mess with me or you mess with any of her friends, and she's coming for you. So.
That's the kind of ally that the community needs, Jessica. It just is.
Absolutely.
So with this being your 1 year anniversary, what does year two hold? I mean, do you have a timeline? Do you have? I mean, we talked a little bit about that earlier.
Basically, it's going to be working on learning how to girl. There's little finesse things that I need to work on my skills, like makeup. And hair. In fact, today I went and I had some business I had to do in the county seat, my hometown actually. And so I was trans and I was visible. I put on my Mary Janes and my black hose and my black pencil skirt and my white blouse and a multicolored cardigan. And I grabbed my trans flag and I paraded around being seen. And I tried to do my hair before I left. And, you know, the self-deprecating humor, I think the best compliment I can give myself is half-assed.
One cheek. I know the feeling because... And you know, it happens on both sides of the trans spectrum. Trans masculine, trans boys, they have to learn boying. And because these are things, and you know, it varies. Brother Deacon Asa was talking about Iran. It varies from culture to culture. Because these are very much cultural things. These are cultural markers, cultural procedures, cultural behaviors. And it's, you know, there's a big gulf because of the things. And it's one of the nice things about the modern era is that, you know, children now among more enlightened homes are not just welded into gender. If you let a child be who a child is, the child will find out for themselves without having it foisted on them. But that was not the case in your childhood or mine or older people. And so I was buried in G.I. Joe's because that was the only doll that was acceptable. And, you know, so much, you know, gendered toys, you know, I've loved to cook all my life, but my God, to say I wanted an Easy Bake Oven. Hell no. That was an invitation to an ass beating.
One of my female cousins got a Easy Bake Oven 1 year for Christmas, and I sat back and I was amazed. Say what? You can do what with that? Oh.
And then, oh dear God, there was, and this dates me, a mystery date.
Ooh.
Yeah. No. Don't even turn away from the television when the ad for it is on Saturday morning. Yeah. I mean, that's just the reality.
Well, let's use that to segue back to the question that was asked earlier about sexuality.
Sure.
What can you read that one again?
Let me
forget the nuances that were asked.
Let me call it up here. Wow, where'd it go? Only take me a sec. Ah, there we go. Do you mind elaborating for those of us who don't know? What does realizing that one is trans do to one's sexual preference? If you're comfortable with it, of course. Not meaning to put you on the spot.
For me, it didn't change at all. I always been attracted to women, and I'm still attracted to women. Especially my lovely bride of 3 years. And I'm very happy. Although I will admit that Ryan Reynolds is...
there's always a caveat.
I'm laughing because Susan made a comment, so... But yes, Ryan Reynolds.
Oh my God! I hear it. I hear her in the background.
That's my only caveat.
Well, and in my case, it's. I can only sort of parrot what I've read from the data, and that is, and Terry Ellen was the first to put me onto this, is that. For some, it will change, and for some, it will not. And it's not about latency or another, you know, a closet within a closet. It just changes. There are people who transition and continue to be attracted to the sex of that they were beforehand, and there are those who transition. And you know, let's say you were a straight male before transition. And you may be a transbian after transition, or after transition, you'll find yourself attracted to guys. And curiously enough, that means you're straight. You can ponder this stuff until your eyes roll back into your head, until your eyes cross. And in my case, it is... Well, it's uncomfortable because I've got such a load. I've finally got such a loading dose of hormones going through me that
it's a wonderful feeling, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's only in the last 4 weeks that they've gotten up to where they need to be. My energy level not like too much coffee or anything, but my energy level just shot through the roof because before when it was too low, it was like, you know, like trying to start a car with a bad battery in the cold.
I like to use the analogy of diesel in winter.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. But on the other hand, it's hard for me to talk about sexuality simply because it's a non-issue, if that makes any sense. The phrase that I've used in the past is that sexuality is a hard question for me to answer because my libido is deader than Pharaoh's cat. It ain't there. And it's not something I grieve. There is a scene, if you will, in Plato's Republic, where he is talking to an older man. And the older man, you know, the ancient Greeks, you know, women parading around on stage wearing giant phalluses that have to be held up with, like, monopods. Never mind. Gender, you know, gender is not concrete by any stretch of the imagination. But anyway, the Socrates, who's always, you know, hey, how are you, buddy? And then the conversation immediately falls apart because Socrates has to argue with everybody. Everybody's wrong but Socrates. But the part of the conversation that I was always, and it resonated with me when I first read it and continues to this day because I'm telling the story right now, is there's a passage, not a scene, a passage, where talking with this older guy, he tells Socrates that he feels such a profound sense of relief because he no longer finds himself driven by the urge to be crass here, fuck. He's not ruled by his sexual passions anymore. He's able to devote his time and his energies to things that matter, that he now realizes as an older person matter a lot more than where he's going to or who he's going to have sexy time with next. And in an ancient Greek perspective, that could be a grown woman or a young boy. But he says that he's just relieved. He's just they didn't have the terminology to talk about things like estrogen versus testosterone. I mean, they knew what happened when you lop those little danglers off. No offense, I hope that was not a trigger.
No.
They knew that much, but they didn't know about testosterone. They didn't know about estrogen. But what he is talking about is the decrease that cis males get in terms of testosterone, because the older one gets, when one gets old enough, one damned well notices it. For instance, the hair stops growing on your head and decides to grow in your nose and ears instead. And it's just gross. That's the conversion of testosterone into dihydrotestosterone, which is also very hard on one's heart. But he felt this profound sense of relief. And something similar happened to me. I find myself able to focus, able to concentrate, able to think about things that I did not think about in the same way before. And this is not to say that I was some rutting goat. I was not. But to someone who is not born cis male or assigned male at birth, for someone who isn't, it's kind of hard maybe to fathom. It's evolutionarily hardwired into so-called male sexuality. And I think it's hardwired in either gay or straight or bi. It's kind of like the joke that I love when spring comes and the peepers come out. Because it's just a joyful little sign of spring. But the biological reality, the biological imperative of what's happening there is that all these little frogs are out there sitting in the marshlands, the wetlands, going, want to get laid, want to get laid, want to get laid, want to get laid. And the other half of the little peepers are hollering back, you want to get laid? 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 And they're all answering a hormonal and an instinctual urge. And some of that still exists within humanity. So I mean, it was a good question, Brother Deacon. Unfortunately, it's damn difficult to answer because sexuality in the trans community is every bit as convoluted and confusing, if not more so, than it is in the cis community. You know,
Once again, your mileage may vary.
Right. And I mean, I remember I have always tried to be an ally to the vast, wonderful, confusing panorama of humanities. And so when I would hear way, way, way back at when I came back to radio in the early aughts, you know, that was the heyday of the Bible thumping, Bible humping preachers hollering about homosexuality is a choice. And it always struck me, you know, why does nobody ever get close enough to these damn fools to say, well, great, when did you choose to be straight, dumbass? There are no choices where that is concerned. Because the old adage, if it don't fit, don't force it, is super duper double plus true in terms of human sexuality. Am I right?
I would say so, yeah.
So, you know, no easy answers, but that's because we're curious little hairless primates and there are no easy answers for us about any damn thing. You know, for the religious for the religious crowd, as Terry Ellen points out so eloquently, according to their mythology, Eve was the first trans woman, because it says right there in Genesis that the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky fashioned her from a hunk of Adam. That means the part that he fashioned Eve out of was boy, cis male, and somehow, but even that becomes complicated, Jessica, because that is and very few people who don't take the time to think about things like myth, very few people realize that that is an excuse. That is an excuse that was written into Genesis by the temple priests during the Babylonian captivity, which is when Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy were written, that is a justification for patriarchy. Well, you know, man came first, when it's almost biologically impossible for that to be true, if you think about it. And in fact, the Y chromosome, we know, is a mutation. It's even stunted. Seen under a microscope, if I'm correct, the Y chromosome looks about like half of an X chromosome. It's a biological experiment that may or may not prove to be successful, because there's other genetic science out there that says that the Y chromosome is going away. And it doesn't mean that there won't be any more humans. It's the way that evolution is running. And I'm fascinated by all of that. I mean, do you ever sit around and scratch your head and look at stuff like that, Jessica?
Occasionally.
It's not, yeah, I mean, it's probably more frustrating and headache-inducing than, you know, trying to find an EGR valve for a TR7.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, Jessica, this has been a marvelous conversation. I'm so glad you came on, and I'm so glad that we could celebrate your transiversary along on the same day as the Trans Day of Visibility, and thank you for all the candor and all the kindness and all the decency, and most of all, I hope today is for you a day of joy.
Well, I hope it's the rest of it is a day of joy for you as well, Robin, and your little encounter with the turf bot was the worst of it. So, but it has been a wonderful conversation, and I thank you for having me.
And you are welcome back anytime. And you know, It doesn't, and you know, like the rest of the community, we are not single faceted individuals. We have passions and interests that extend far beyond issues of gender. It's just that gender makes us more able to fully live the richness of our own lives. Is that fair?
I would say so, yeah.
So I will thank you and wish you a wonderful remainder of your evening. You're an hour behind me. Have y'all already had dinner?
I still have to eat, but that's not that big of a deal. It's about 7 o'clock, so.
Okay.
It's still relatively early.
Yeah, and it's a little, and in terms of early, it's way too early to be going out and sitting down and yeah. So that's a celebration you and Susan can put off to a safer day.
Absolutely. Oh, I got a question for you, Robin. Where are we with funding?
We're still looking for that last $15.
Tell you what, mark me down. I'll hit you up on PayPal as soon as I hang up.
Oh, thank you, Jessica. Thank you. That's so sweet. And with that, we'll wrap things up. Thank you again. Right. Happy Tadav. That sounds, like I said, that sounds so Vulcan. T'pau, t'pring, t'dav. But happy day of visibility to you, and I look forward to our next one.
I look forward to it as well. You have a good night, and anytime you want, just let me know and I'll come on.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Jessica. And, you know, come in, pop in on Friday on the front porch and all that other stuff, too.
I'm absolutely going to try to.
Okay, you take care.
Yeah, bye.
Bye now. That's our pal Jessica in Minnesota, and what a delightful conversation that's been. And I hope the program has been informative, and I hope that it has been enjoyable, and I hope that we'll all be getting back together again tomorrow for the first day of a new month. Remember, Bruce's Memorial Challenge will be on the table tomorrow. Thank you. And program note on the way out the door, I hope there will be no ill effects from our second Pfizer. But if there are, I'll note. Kevin in Colorado Springs said, as you close, this encouragement for you and Agnes for tomorrow's shot. As you know, I had my second dose of the Pfizer vaccine yesterday. So far, the side effects have been quite minimal. No headache like the first dose, and in fact, the only real side effect that I've felt so far is slight arm soreness at the injection site and some drowsiness today. Not bad at all. Well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you. I appreciate that, and I hope that turns out to be the case for Agnes and me, too. And if it does, well, I'll be here tomorrow evening, and hopefully we won't be interrupted on Friday either. So, again, thanks for that. Thank you, Kevin. And that's the program. Thank you to all of you who keep this program on the air through your kind contributions via subscriptions at PayPal and Patreon. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Look what y'all did. Y'all made it possible for there to be another month of community-funded, independent, progressive, liberal conversation radio. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Please take a moment, if you haven't already, and take a moment if you have, and check in with your member of the House of Representatives, especially if you are represented by a Democrat, and ask them, please, to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act, because contained within the language of the AIC Act is the very future of Appalachia itself. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Stay home when you can. When you have to go out, wear your mask, double mask. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. Use your hand sanitizer. Don't let up. Don't drop your guard. Maintain your social distance like Paul from Parts Unknown tells us. 15 feet between people with masks and 15 parsecs between you and someone who isn't. And of course, if somebody comes toward you hollering,
we know who can use which words,
ignore that person like the plague, because they are. Later, and the happiest trans day of visibility to every trans person and every ally. You're seen, you're valid, and you're visible. Later.